Ring Around the Rosie by our guest, Abia. Welcome.
Thanks, Juliet. How you doing? Yellow Springs, what's going on?
So happy to have you here. Now, you are a Dayton area native.
I am.
But based out of Cincinnati now.
Yes.
I'm curious. I'm always curious. Was music always kind of the thing for you?
That's a yes and no. In different ways, I think it is. You know, like as we progress in our lives, music impacts us in different ways. And I think, so when I was little, living here in Dayton, I think we were living maybe like Kettering. It was like Spalding Road. I don't know. It's like near Kettering and Belmont and maybe, I don't know, somewhere over there, Beaver Creek near all those. But my sister was 4 years younger than me. So when I was like 7 years old, my sister's three, my mom was, you know, mostly with her. My dad was out mowing the lawn or whatever. I would just sit, you know, we had the credenza with the record player underneath, TV on the top, and the records on each side. So you open the door, there's the records. And I was always intrigued with reading the liner notes and looking at the, I think like a lot of the cover art on the back was more extravagant. Maybe there were, the lyrics might be on there, or sometimes they had the other records on the label printed on the record sleeve. So I just sat there by myself a lot, read a lot of those. I liked the music, you know, I listened to growing up in the 70s, you know, as a child. So I think that's where the music thing first started happening. But I was pretty introverted. Like now I think I'm like an ambivert, kind of like an extroverted introvert. But I was still pretty shy. And even in the 80s, you know, it's like punk rock and new wave. I wasn't scared. You know, I was unapologetically myself. I wasn't scared to dress a certain way or to take the bullying. I mean, it wasn't fun. Nobody likes that. But I did love the music, you know, of that time, of my, you know, I think, you know, whatever we listen to in our teen years is kind of, not always, but most of the time is kind of where we're going later, you know, with our musical taste. And so doing that, I was writing poetry at the time. In high school, getting published in the Public Library of Cincinnati, Hamilton County's young writers, like 7th through 12th grade, juried type of quarterly publication. And then I'm 49 now, when I was 31 or so, well, no, maybe actually 29, like late 90s, somebody was like, oh, you should put your, you know, like some, like I had a lot of hip hop friends, you should put your poetry to music. And I was like, oh, okay. So I did that, recorded, you know, on some hip-hop beats, just straight poetry. And then I connected with Native Son in New York, who had produced Saul Williams' Ohm, one of his, that was on Lyricist Lounge, one of his, like, first, like, seminal.
I was going to say, that's like a seminal
totally,
album.
Totally, totally. And so he was like, okay, like he was calling it flowetry, you know, before the R&B group had come out like a few years. And he was like, okay, just to get poetry out to the mainstream. And of course, attaching music to anything gets people to listen to it. So, and this was a lot of black poets in the New York scene was, you know, who he was working with at the time in the late 90s. He did the Eargasms Crucial Poetics Volume 1 compilation as well. So he was telling everyone, put a hook, write a hook for your poem. Sing a hook, say a hook, whatever, have a chorus in there. And then it's a song. And then we can, you know, get this genre, this flowetry genre out there. So started doing that, came back here, started recording, you know, recorded in New York with him for a minute. And then I got on stage. I was, you know, doing my poems on stage maybe like late 90s. But then I started, you know, with the hip hop beats. And then I kind of was still operating kind of in the hip hop scene just because that was, you know, where the music was coming from. But then I kind of around 2003 integrated into the what we'd call rock scene, which is, you know, everything like, you know, punk, electronic, indie rock, Americana, everything. So and I fell in love with it, and I never thought, you know, as a young child reading liner notes of Bread albums,
yep.
You know, that that would be me on a stage. And it was I still, when I look back on it, it's really enlightening, because I just thought I would be too shy to do that. And now people tell me, it's like, oh my gosh, your energy. So, and I'm like, I still get nervous. You know, I think everybody knows that behind that confident stance lies someone who is ready to freak out. So yeah, that's kind of how it so yes and no. It started at a young age, but in a different way.
So you said that you were performing your poetry a little bit prior to,
correct,
you know, adding in the hip hop beats and sort of, you know, this evolution from poetry,
exactly,
to music. Was it in, you know, kind of a performance poetry, spoken word kind of a scene?
Or? It was. Okay. It was. I was predominantly poetry nights where it was mostly artists of color and poets of color. That, you know, even though I'm white, that just for whatever reason, you know, and there was no cultural appropriation there. That's just what, you know, my son was 8 at the time or so, and he's biracial. But I just felt more comfortable being myself. Mm-hmm. I felt more accepted. There, you know, wasn't, you know, I think in a lot of, when I was younger, being around a lot of white kids, they bullied me a lot. And you know, anybody is going to talk behind your back at some point in time, you know, but I felt more welcomed and in that community. And so that really was, a liberating thing. I got a lot of support, and was still able to maintain my uniqueness within that as well.
In talking about maintaining that uniqueness, as you started to craft your music, you know, and really, you know, say, okay, I'm a poet, I'm doing this flowetry thing, which is kind of this really interesting thing that's sort of between where you were and
right,
where you are now, all the way to where you are now. Was there a moment where you said, oh, okay, I'm a musician now? Was that like an aha moment, or was it kind of like,
ooh,
oh, by the way, you know, like years later, you're like, oh, I guess this is what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I appreciate that question, because I get what you're saying. I think it sounds kind of like you're asking about, like, when did I consider, or when did I find my legitimacy as a musician?
Yeah, to yourself.
Yeah. And you know, it definitely wasn't an aha moment. You know, even though I was accepted more in the, you know, what we call the mainstream rock scene, there were still at first grumblings of, she needs to focus on one genre.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just being around mostly people who played live instruments and, you know, full bands, and playing mostly with, on bills with full bands. And I had just my Beats, my little CD player that I got at Walgreens or whatever, because they would break so often, I wasn't going to spend a lot of money. But I don't know, like, even like in 2002, I received my first of 6 nominations for this Cincinnati City Beat, Cincinnati Entertainment Awards. And that's the Alternative News Weekly in Cincinnati. And I don't think even then, looking back, that I considered myself legitimate. I considered myself respected, or more respected, I would say. But I really don't think it was, maybe, honestly, like the last few years. And I think that comes with my experience, where it's like, where people are asking me for advice. Mm-hmm. Even on the business side of music. And it's like, oh, I do. I am credible. Mm-hmm. I am mm-hmm. a real musician. You know, when I think also quick little story, like when I see people on the street and, you know, I don't know them and they're like, aren't you Abia? Like, oh, my gosh, I'm a big fan of your music. I got a free meal at a local sandwich shop and I was like, going to pay. And he's like, oh, you're Abia, aren't you? Because I had an Abia button on. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I was like, yeah. And he's like, I thought so. I'm a big fan of your music. He's like, I got you. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And he's like, I got you. And I was like, oh, cool. I appreciate it. I was like, what's your name? And I shook his hand. And, you know, and I think that when we, I think for probably a lot of musicians, certainly for myself, when we hear the impact that we have on people's lives with our music, because I think that's what music's main purpose is, whether it's intended or not, it happens. And I think to hear that, you know, when we touch someone's lives and have a positive impact on it, I think that's when I began to feel like a legitimate musician.
I think that's so interesting because we see it in music. We see it in radio too, where it's really easy as a creator or a maker, especially when you have a microphone, to, you know, you're alone in a room with your microphone, with your ear doing your thing, and to kind of forget that relationship with the person receiving the music and how what you're putting out is then sort of transformed by how it's affecting them. Exactly. So I can totally,
yes,
I totally, totally get that.
Yes.
It's interesting to me that you brought up genre, because what I loved about the new singles is that there was so much happening there. Mm-hmm. And it touched on so many things that I like, and there were touchstones to artists I like and admire, and yet totally new things happening too. But I also know, having spoken to many artists that do live in a lot of different genres all at once, that while creatively that can be a really an amazing, amazing thing to mm-hmm. not be boxed in, it can make booking and the business end of your music so difficult to try
that
to categorize
yourself.
That
is a very true story, Juliet. it is. And I think, and that's a good point, because, like, you know, kind of what I was saying earlier when I was starting, that, you know, when people in the rock scene were saying, oh, she needs to focus on one genre. A local music writer had told me that as he was writing up like my description for the Midpoint Music Festival. And I have always been unapologetically myself. I you know, I was in high school in the 80s, so punk and new wave, and which I still listen to, that was an influence. Late 80s, like pre-grunge, Babes in Toyland, things like that, even like early White Zombie around the late 80s as well. And then in the 90s, dancehall reggae and golden era hip hop, even like indie rock mm-hmm. in there as well, avant-garde music and noise music. So I've done like performance art things in the noise arena as well. Like Dana Hamblin, my friend, and I would have a like vocal noise performance art group called That Girl George.
Nice.
That we do things sometimes. And I think the key to surviving, I mean, to surviving being kind of genre-less, was that at the very beginning, and shout out to Native Son for coming up with the flowetry term, because he said flowetry was poetry to any type of music, right? My lyrics are always going to be poetic in one way, you know, or another. And so I branded my music in the early aughts as such, as like poetry to any type of music, where some artists, like say some hip hop artists, 20 years later, they want to do indie rock mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and they're stuck. Or it's like when you get typecast as an actor mm-hmm. and you're doing that role for like 10, 15, 20 years, and then you want to do a sitcom and they're like, oh no, you're drama.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. So just from jump, I was like, this is how it is. How it is however I want it to be. Because all of those genres I mentioned earlier, those are all influences on me. And I can't not do them either physically or emotionally or mentally. Like, it just comes out of me. When I write songs, I don't come up usually with a subject matter. I just listen to the track. I start humming gibberish melodies. I might write a hook first, like whatever I'm feeling. I'm a Cancer also, by the way. I think that's part of it. Shout out to Cancerians. What's going on? I think that, and that's just how I write. And I think that helps, you know, with, you know, coming up with songs that have, you know, what you were talking about, the new singles, where it's a whole mishmash of everything, but that it does make sense. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how it makes sense, because like I said, I'm just stream of consciousness through it. So, but yeah, the key was to branding myself as any genre.
Your writing process is really interesting to me, knowing that you come from a poetry background, mm-hmm. because one could assume that coming from a poetry background, it's like, okay, here are the lyrics, and now I'm going to figure out the music. But what you're describing to me musically is a very, I know poets that write like that too, you know,
right.
that you know, are taking that same approach to words on a page.
Yes.
And so I find that like so true to your poetry background, that it's not, you know, it's not necessarily just here are the words and now what are, you know, the music and the sounds that go with
right.
them, but that it's a very organic, intertwined process.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, we've been talking about the new singles, and I want to give folks Yay. A listen to them. I think let's listen to the first one first, the A side. So do you want to give us a little intro for this, or tell
sure.
us a little about
and
it?
And this is Cry Like, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm great at words, but not at song titles. So both of these were, as I often do when a producer sends me a track, and, you know, sometimes they'll just call it ASDF. They just, you know, whatever. So these beats were called, this one was called Cry Like, all one word. And I was like, sounds good. The lyrics don't necessarily go with it. But, you know, this was produced by Dave Ross, who was in formerly of Cincinnati, kind of like electro rock, synth rock bands, Chalk and Cry Kids. And Dana Hamblin is singing backup vocals on this. So I think it's like electro dance hall punk is kind of the holy trinity of genres on this one. So I hope y'all like it. Enjoy.
Let's take a listen to this new music from Abia, our guest. We'll be back to talk more with her here in just a moment on Kaleidoscope on Why So.
The biker's eyes in between demise of pestilence meets paradise. Divine streets signing lifelines. By the time spent, a better home and garden in the puddle of subhuman. Woman in the backseat, a top secret. Documenting all the movement. Can I have something in your pocket? It's okay. Cause there's nothing left to see. Just to read the vibes of truth between the them.
Brand new music from our guest, Abia, based out of Cincinnati. That one was called Masked, came out as a kind of a double A-side single with Cry Like, the prior track. Tell me a little bit about Masked. There's a lot happening in there.
Yes. it was, the beat, you know, came to me like that. And then, vocally, it was just... There's I think two choruses in there accidentally, And it's, you know, I always try to think of like, what is it about after I write it? Because like I said, sometimes I'm like, I just put it down, it comes out and I'm like, don't know what it's about. Maybe video dating. I don't know. One hook says that, but I don't know what the rest of the song says. But I just really, you know, Cry Like is a good, I think Cry Like is more like of an introspective, one, in that regard, but Masked, you know, has a lot of, I think impactful lyrics and message in it, but you can dance all day long. You can dance. You're at the office, chair dance. You're in the car, chair dance. Like, you know, I mean, I think it's just like, oh, you're like, okay, what is this? So like, even I think, you know, once the song starts, you know, getting into it, after about a minute or so, you're just like, don't realize your hips are moving. And I think, oh, that reminds me, the LA hip hop artist and kind of now comedian, Open Mike Eagle. He said one time, my music is the only thing your brain and your hips can agree on.
Oh, I like that.
So like smart words that you can, you know, move it to. So and I was like, that's it, you know, like so. And, you know, just having that, I think Masked is a perfect example of having that, covering both sides of being weird, you know, I think like, you know, you mentioned that, before, but still like a lot of people who maybe don't listen to any of the genres that are encompassed in that would still like it. Just because I think of the music is a big driver on that. I do like when I sing or write the, I guess the vocal arrangement, I am a huge fan of melody, and I do tend to like I do try to ride the beat, like not it's not conscious, but I somehow subconsciously find a way to like ebb and flow in and out of the beat, and I think that also, however that is, that I'm getting in the pocket with my vocals, even if it's like off kilter here and there. I think that lends to some of its uniqueness and people being like, oh, hey, like, you know, washing your dishes and, oh, what's that? That comes on your Pandora or something. Yeah. So I'm really happy with both of them. And the double A side single, my friend Tim Andrel, who's, here in the Dayton area as well. He's like, yeah, let's call it a double A side single. And I was like, is that a thing? Of course, I had to go Google it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, so I was like, yeah. I was like, oh, it is a thing. So kind of they're both A-side quality is basically, I think, you know, the premise, or that's what I'm calling it. And so kind of I have a little tagline to just kind of maybe elevator pitch for what a double A-side single is. And I say, one single, two songs, both bangers.
I love it.
Yes.
I love it.
That's my elevator pitch. So everyone feel free to use double A side single, because it's like somewhere in between a single and an EP.
Exactly.
If you want to have two songs, but they are kind of connected.
Yeah, you're like halfway to an EP.
Yes.
A little past an actual single, because
right,
you've got, you know, more than one
right
happening there.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. In this day and age, you have to be creative with how you're presenting your work. And I think that definitely fits. And then I did want to add really quick, the cover art. When you go to my Bandcamp site at abiyahmusic.bandcamp.com, it's A-B-I-Y-A-H. The cover art is like an anime version of me with a kind of like dark, kind of purplish maroonish like background, and with my pixie haircut and my teal lipstick and my nose ring, and holding a world, like the weight of the world on my shoulders, giving the peace sign with the other hand with lightning bolts coming out of my fingers, and then the font It's all an illustration. The font is like a Bia. It's kind of like a disco type of vibe, kind of like a gradient, kind of with the silver at the bottom of the letters. And then Cry Like and Masked are kind of like a mix of disco, new wave type of lettering. And Tiffany Gomez is an amazing young woman of color who I met at Afropunk in Brooklyn 2 years ago. And we just basically were just walking past each other. We're like, oh my God, you're amazing. Like, because we liked each other's outfits. We both had on floral dresses. And just like that. And so she's like, I should do a watercolor portrait. She's doing like a little 5-minute watercolor portraits of people. And she gave me her card. I gave her my card. And I've been following her on social media and Instagram and Facebook and Tumblr. And I was like, when it came time to find an artist for this cover art, I was like, I have to go with Tiffany. And she is a total sweetheart too. And I was like, I sent her a message like, you know, would you be able to do this? So she came up with that concept of anime Abia, like a dark one, because these songs are kind of darkish sounding, you know. I was like, please don't do it in pastels and super bright like primary colors. I was like, that's going to give the wrong impression.
Yeah.
And so I'm really grateful to Tiffany for really coming through. There's, I mean, so much great feedback. It was, you know, to just trust an artist to, you know, with no direction to, you know, represent that vision. You know, it was amazing. And just that happenstance meeting and our little floral dresses at Afropunk made that come into existence. So there's a whole lot of stories kind of around just these two little songs.
And like, how cool to be, you know, an independent artist in music, sort of, you know, touching all of these different musical touchstones, and then to have that radiate out into the visual arts world, and, you know, have another touchstone in Tiffany and her work, and having that connect to your work. That's really beautiful.
It's really important to me, especially to expose the world to artists of color, especially young artists of color. And she lives in D.C. So I think that was another reason I was like, she's so amazing. She does just like my music is all over genre wise, her art is also all over art genre wise. So she can do illustration and she can do abstract stuff, like, you know, stuff for like, you know, blogs or web magazines, just like real simple with like maybe some light, like colored ink wash and a few lines type, you know, it's all so good. And I just really wanted to get her art out there and help her expand her artistic universe.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Super. She's a really beautiful person. Yeah. Tiffany Gomez, TiffaNi, look her up. It's at Tiftanic on Instagram.
We'll get a link up to her art. We've already got a link up to Abia's music at facebook.com/kaleidoscope radio. You can connect with her there, get your hands on these new singles, and we'll get a link up to Tiffany's art as well. So we're heading into a new year. What's 2019 looking like for you musically?
A lot of collaborations, but more so on the music. And so I think, you know, all these years, it's just been, you know, people giving me beats and, you know, I'll just be like, okay, like, you know, I'll write something. They're kind of, you know, kind of to fit what they, you know, already kind of had structure type of thing. And next year I really want to start working on the music being more collaborative. Right. So actually being like, okay, you know what, can I have a little bit of input? You know, I certainly am not a musician and I do respect those boundaries. I think that's another way for me to connect about connections, to connect better with myself, with the person making the music. I think the listeners will definitely be able to hear that cohesiveness there. And like I said, I want to have a positive impact because that's what we do. So you know, even. So I'm always going to have like beats or backing tracks, right? Mainly because I don't think I'll ever have a full band because I can't see scheduling for grown folks' time with day jobs and our families.
Yeah.
And I want to go play this show out of town, and it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to get up. I'm like, need to get up and go.
Yeah.
Like at a moment's notice type of chick. But like, you know, and part of that music thing is like, okay, hey, you know, here's this musician from this band. And like, oh yeah, he can do some drum programming too. But okay, he can record some keys parts. So like Cry Like in Mass, for example, does have this component. It has drum programming. It has live guitar, live synths that are like sampled and, you know, whatever, things like that. But sampled from that musician's own work. And so that's how a few new songs I'm going to kind of approach in that way. Like, so we'll have sampled live instrumentation by that musician. And then, you know, kind of mix that in there. I, even from the beginning, 2003, I had so many local musicians wanting to work with me, like even, oh, hey, I'll play a guitar part on there. You could just put it on the track. So I really, even now, I think I have a lot of the Cincinnati music scene, you know, available to me. And also then doing collaborations, you know, with, like doing songs vocally with people. There's a singer, JC Caprice, in Detroit. And we're going to do a song. She's a R&B soul singer. So we're going to do a song. She does a lot of she's like works for the like it's like a hip hop ambassadorship because like through the State Department.
Nice.
So you are actually a diplomat, an ambassador through the State Department, and like go to Croatia, Turkey, things like this. And you know, I've presented at the Women in Hip Hop Conference in Detroit. That's where I met her a few years ago. So when she heard these songs, she was like, she's like, we have to collaborate. So I was like, okay, yeah, this would be awesome. There is another woman in New Mexico. She's from Springfield, Ohio, right down the street. And her name is Billy, and she goes by A.Billy Free. And she mixes some very melodic kind of like poetry rapping or flowetry, and then sings also kind of like on an experimental soul type of vibe as well. She's started producing. She just released an instrumental EP, so we're going to probably work on something. And then, you know, like, because the wintertime is like my hibernation. I'm going to start planning and songwriting. So that's a lot of that. But I do plan on sometime in the first half of the year, probably end of spring, just because my day gig gets hectic in the spring. There's a lot of deadlines for a project in May or something. But I really want to run that, like, you know, Bloomington, Detroit, Chicago, Milwaukee type of route, and Louisville.
A nice big Midwestern circle,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. And I do have, like, I never thought I would have fans in other cities or, like, oh, I'd go somewhere, like, oh, would people want to see me? But I've built a lot of relationships over the last maybe, what is it, like 5 years or so. And so I think that's, you know, that's going to be a good one. Like, even in Louisville, I love Louisville. I love playing there. And I've done some work with Girls Rock Louisville as well, because I'm all about empowering, especially the young women or young non-binary folks who want to be into music. And I think it was like last year, I did a workshop on their, like, the Friday that they had to do their show, where they learned their little song that week. And I mean, they were so good at that show. It was like, Juliet, you would just be blown away. It was just like, wow. Like, so they're like 10 to 18. Most of them were like 13, 14, 15 years old. And they, on the that Friday morning at their morning rally type thing, I did a like performance and how to beat stage fright workshop.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. So a lot of the there were several girls who did have actual, like, clinical anxiety, mm-hmm, as well. So, you know, it's even that stage fright is even stronger, you know. And it's like, okay, you know, they have coping skills, you know, already. But that stage fright is a whole another layer.
Yeah.
And, you know, just for anybody. And so I gave them tips on performing. I gave them tips on banter. I gave them tips on how to shout out the band who played before you.
Yeah.
Shout out the band, like maybe your last song before your last song, the band that's playing after you. Shout out the sound guy or sound person. But they really liked the stage fright one because they're like, how do you do it? And I, you know, I was like, I get scared all the time. I'm scared here right now. Like, that's what I told them. Yeah. And they're just like, wow. Like, yeah. And so a few of them, you know, were asking like, you know, well, if I'm scared tonight, what do I do? I was like, well, if you're okay with hugs, you can come give me a hug. Like, or I'll give you a hug. Like, I'll hold your hand. I will just sit and talk to you. If you just, if you're like, tonight, I'll be there at the venue. If you need to, mm-hmm. you know, talk about this. And you're getting really nervous, I was like, I'll be there for you. And so like three girls did come over to me and I'm like, okay. I was like, okay, it's okay. They're like they'd be like, can I have a hug?
Aww.
And I was like, oh, sure, sweetie. Like, and then I was like, okay. I was like, what's your favorite movie? I was like, let's, you know, like divert,
yeah.
you know, the focus to something that they like that makes them comfortable. So I was like, oh, what's your favorite movie? We're gonna talk about your favorite movie. And it really, you know, really helped. So, you know, Louisville is, it's just like one of my favorites, but then I'm going to go, I think to, you know, definitely do another show in New York, Las Vegas, like and out West too. So like, I have a lot of friends out in LA. I'm like, you just need to come out here. I have a free yeah. place to stay. I'm like,
oh, it's
I'm
perfect.
Like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, like on Santa Monica Boulevard or something. I was just like, fantastic. And so, there and also I have a lot of friends like kind of, well, you know, like, Billy, she's in New Mexico and then like I have a lot of friends in Arizona, like Phoenix and Tucson. So I think, you know, that's the Western, you know, I have the Midwest. It's because I think everybody in the Midwest has like a Midwest sensibility. So mm-hmm. we vibe off each other.
Oh yeah. So true.
Yes. And so I'm like, okay, let's see what kind of flavor, you know, the West Coast has and, you know, like the Southwest, and whatever. Cause I'm, you know, I'm always comfortable in New York, you know, I've yeah. played there a bunch of times, but so those are the, you know, like playing out of town a lot more, collaborating in different ways with the music aspect, collaborating with, women vocalists who are out of town. And I also and we can talk about this later, but I'm a music journalist. Also, I write for Ghetto Blaster magazine sometimes. There's a big issue that I want to pitch to, like, you know, a major website's opinion section too.
Excellent.
Yeah, we can talk about that later.
We will look forward to that one.
that I think, you know, a lot of folks can relate to. But so you know, writing those things, because, you know, when you were asking me earlier about like when did I feel legitimate, and one of my responses was, oh, when people started asking me for advice. Mm-hmm. And so I think that made me think, you know, I do have this information to share
yeah.
from my personal experiences, in a wide array of aspects of who I am. So I'm like, I need to, you know, I have great business and creative writing skills. So I'm like, I need to help people out maybe and help myself. It helps myself, I think. You know, it helps ourselves more, mm-hmm. you know, when we're getting that out and releasing it. But in this age, this era, we'll call it this era. I think y'all know what I'm talking about. But yeah, this era, I think we do all need to share those to mm-hmm. help each other get through some of this. Mm-hmm. So,
for sure.
Yeah.
For mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
What's it been like getting to know your own voice as a performer? Because vocally, just on the three we've heard, you're doing a lot of different things and you're using your voice in very different ways. What has that been like over your musical journey?
I'm over here laughing and I had my hands over my face, listeners. But I haven't really been comfortable with my voice. ever. I never, like, I think I was in, you know, Catholic school at Immaculate Conception in Belmont and Dayton, like, third, fourth grade. You know, I was in the choir, fifth grade, would sing midnight mass. That's about it. But, but I think, you know, most people, as long as you're not tone deaf, you can probably sing some kind of way. I'm not a singer, you know, I'm not a belter, you know, but I think there are like so many vocalists, you know, in a lot of genres who, you know, are in similar situations, as my voice is. And, I think my voice got stronger as I became more confident. And girl, I'm talking about like 3 years ago. So
it's an ongoing journey, you know?
Yeah, it is. And I think my confidence was really buoyed by people believing in me. You know, it's like I said, it's certainly been hard, you know, sometimes not trying to find, you know, my lane. I definitely know where it is. It's like on all the highways, but avenues, boulevards, courts, whatever. You know, how that fits into the grand picture of what most people consume musically and experience. So, but like with my singing, when I come up with melodies and things I do with my voice, again, it's unconscious, like my writing. So some of the things you hear in some of these two songs of Cry Like a Mast are like, you know, these high pitched, kind of shrill, comfortably shrill, sounds. And, and I was just like, even when we recorded, I think I was just like, because I wrote these songs about 6 years ago, but we didn't record them until maybe a little less than a year ago and then just, you know, release them. But when we were recording, I think I was at the point where I was like, I just don't care anymore. I don't care. I'm just like, I'm really good at doing like one and done. Like, oh, that's one take. Boom, done. Let's do the cut. Boom. Like, but I was just like, I don't care. And I think I cared too much on previous recordings where you're like, I have to get this perfect. I have to. And then you just freeze. You freeze.
Well, and the physicality of singing and using your voice, when you freeze, all of those muscles are freezing along with you, you know, with your mind, your body is freezing up too. So to say I don't care means all of a sudden you're relaxed and your body is able to do whatever the song needs it to do, too.
I guess I unwittingly released all my chakras or opened all them up at once at the same time. And so the recording went really well. And Dana, I think also the feedback of vocalists I admire also was a confidence boost. And then so Dana, who is an amazing vocalist in her, art pop kind of bands that are just all three of them are so good. But she was like, your vocals are so good, like, immediately. And, you know, and I was like, wow, because I admire her so much. When the songs came out and we had the release party at Beth Harris, who sings with the Hiders in Cincinnati, and also with backing vocals for Erica Wennerstrom on her solo tour still of the Heartless Bastards. She was like, your voice is so good. And I'm just like, what? And I'm just like, she's like, oh, that one right there, that part right there. Oh, that part right there. I was like, wow. You know, and so I think, you know, a lot of times when I don't believe in myself, when other people believe in me, that helps my voice so much. And I really appreciate all of them, you know, because it's scary sometimes to even accept that feedback is what I'm saying, you know, because, you know, we may think, oh, am I being arrogant? Am I being like, and I'm like, no, that I'm not doing it to seek that. It's when it comes out of nowhere, that feet, I'm just like, okay. So again, to that legitimacy issue, I feel like, okay, I'm a legitimate vocalist. I'm actually a real vocalist. Sometimes I don't think that, and sometimes I do, you know, it goes back and forth, but definitely, the feedback on these songs, I think, is really going to propel me into a really prolific and impactful and even healing 2019 and beyond for me.
We're talking to Abia. Her new singles, it's a double A-side, Cry Like and Mask. Those are available now. We've got links up to connect with her music at facebook.com/kaleidoscope radio. We'll also get a link up to Tiffany Gomez, who did the album art for the single release. Really awesome stuff there. Check out Abia coming to a city near you in 2019.
Yes, yes.
And with more music to come, you can connect with her on social media and keep tabs on where she's going to be. We're going to hear one more song.
Sure.
This is another one of the older ones. You want to give us a little intro for this?
Yes, this one, when I wrote it, it's called Soul Secrets, and I wrote it like right after I broke up with my ridiculous boyfriend. And
got to have one of those.
I broke up with him. Just let me put that on the record. He lied a lot and a lot of secrets, and I'm like, they're your secrets, not mine. So I would, you know, not on social media, put him on blast, but I would let people know, you know, not a great dude, mm-hmm. and or a great human at that. And so, but back then, like late 2011, early 2012, it was a different time politically. I'm saying that now because the producer is in St. Petersburg, Russia. He's a young, like mid-20s Russian dude named Sergey. And he also has produced like two other songs. And actually a song that I have coming out that's already recorded with Chesky Ramos from Fake Four label. That'll be coming out like maybe February or March. But he... So now I'm kind of like sometimes weird about sharing this song because the climate has changed, you know, since mm-hmm. what has it been, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
With Russia, you know, Russian people, like it's like, you know, when Muhammad Ali said the Vietnamese didn't do nothing to me, you know, it's like, yeah, like it's the leaders that do stuff to all of us. We're not doing anything to each other. So we're still cool, but it's interesting that it's called Sold Secrets with a Russian producer. And on SoundCloud, I have a picture of an old school typewriter and it says like top secret on the paper. I'm like, oh, now it's kind of
taking on a whole new meaning.
Yeah.
Here.
So this is an international collaboration called A Solid Secrets. It has a lot of flowetry going on and then some singing as well.
Let's take a listen to this one from Abia. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so
Thank
much
you,
for
Juliet.
Being here.
I really appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks. Check one, check two, check three, now go your way. Check one, check two, check three, now go your way. Check one, check two, check three, please go. Red River, this give a toss, lifeline, time spaced out between moon and cloud. So I sliver, deliver clock out, sprint the gamut, tongue on lockout. Sweet nothings on the window, so they flocked out. Laundrying on my skirt, so I'm locked out. Spot on sacrosanct, blank tablets, the tablet on interlude. Boy, culture rude. Vulture on the mother load, road, hip to the static, dramatic tongue on the touch tone. Shown in desperate measure, treasure by the pound. Plundered downtown, found drunken misgivings, living drought until.